Welcome to the Why Dad podcast. We are your hosts, Andrew Stoppelstead and Paul Wandry, and we are on a mission to figure out what it means to be a dad, a husband, a man, and how to be the best version of that and how to get there. And today we have a special guest on to help us figure that out, especially targeting something that is very appropriate, very near, at least to, you know, my heart, given our current times, and that is unity. And we have as our guest Chip Webster, father, entrepreneur, and founder of the nonprofit Unity in Service. And he's on a mission to rebuild trust, unity, and connection in a fractured world by helping folks lead with service, not just words. And if you're a father thinking about how to raise your children in the world that seems increasingly divided, this conversation is for you. So, Chip, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Looking forward to it.
So are we. Yeah, you know, in our earlier conversation, Chip, I know I was left with I have so many questions because this is so relevant to our current times. You know, like the nation seems to be getting increasingly divided, and you know, I'm left with my question, like, how am I going to raise my kids in this environment? You know, both to, you know, maintain their identity and themselves within that environment, but also to hopefully make a difference. So very excited for this. To kind of get us started, can you give us a little bit of your origin story? What made you lean into service, and like, how has fatherhood shaped your views along the way?
My origin story was a dark, rainy night. No, anyway.
You got Batman on the show.
Yes. We found
it. I didn't get married till I was 30 to my first wife, and we had two sons, and that happened when I was 38 and 40. So the first one was kind of like a surprise. Never should be, but it was. And when we had the first one, we decided that having two children was better for them than one. So we had the second one. I have two boys. They're now 40 and 39. I have four grandkids. So I guess I did something right.
Right.
And they have great wives. And they're very into fatherhood. For me, the most important thing we do as human beings is raise the next generation. And so I took it seriously with attention and intention. I didn't know, you know, exactly what I was doing, but I just knew that it was going to take focus. And I got lucky. I was able to spend a lot of time with them. When I first had our first kids, I was just starting a business, independent phone book publishing business, and then got out of that business and moved to Florida. I was in Atlanta at the time, and moved to Florida and started from scratch a career with an organization called Vistage, which is an organization of CEOs that puts together groups of CEOs to work and help each other. Okay. And I facilitated that.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And I learned a lot. Yeah, because I had fathers and grandfathers in the group. So, you know, I believe you become the average of the 10 people you hang out with. And yes, which is true for us as the parents and true for the kids. And so I just got very lucky. And one of the things I decided was this is going to take time and attention. I was fortunate being an independent contractor that on, I think, 4 years, I took a month off and traveled with the kids. I think traveling is the most educational thing you can do. And my goal was to expose my two sons to as much as I could. They'll make their choices. You know, got them to Europe. I got them to a lot of the battlefields, Gettysburg, out west. We did the Rocky Mountains from Utah through north of Banff. So gorgeous. Things like that. But that was time together,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
Where, you know, you're driving, you have lots of interesting conversations. And the other thing I did because of my role, and I would urge every parent to do this, you can do it if you want to, is find how to expose your kids to different businesses and different careers. Mm. And okay. I was able to do that at a very young age for them. And now they talk about it. And my former wife was very good about getting them into Boy Scouts, and they're both Eagle Scouts. And they will tell you the things they learned on their Eagle Scout projects help them today. You had to organize people. You had to have a goal. You had to have a plan. And so just those things And then I coached them in soccer. I knew nothing about soccer, still don't. But when they were peewees, it was just swarm ball, so it didn't matter. And my youngest son played D3 football and basketball, which he learned a lot on the athletic field, too. So I guess if I was to say one sentence, it's time. I'd come home from work and we'd play basketball. Come home from work, we'd play games. When they were smaller, we were just always doing something interactive, wrestling with them. Two little boys, they were like two little otters, you know, they were just wrestling with each other all the time. And they're only 17 months apart, so they're almost twins. And I enjoyed it immensely. Now, as I see it, you'll get this opportunity to see your kids as parents. Mine didn't. My parents were passed on before my first son came. And I think, you know, one of the real joys in life is, you know, I did some stuff right. I certainly did some stuff wrong. And the other thing I did is when they turned about 6 or 7, can't remember the exact year, I started taking them individually on a weekend trip. And when they were small, we would go to Disney and to different theme parks because that's what they wanted to do. As they got older, we'd go to football games. My youngest son, we went to a Nebraska-Iowa game and froze our butts off in Lincoln and go to Duke basketball games, things that we want to do. And then my older son, this last year, we were in Annapolis, Maryland, hanging out together. So that's important. One of my good friends reminded me, because they were so close, I always talk about Whit and Cal, like they were one. And he said, you got to remember, they're two different people.
Right.
And that was really helpful. If you have multiple kids, they're not like a singular being. They're two different, very different. Mm-hmm. My sons are extremely different.
Yeah. On that note, there's something I've heard along the way that like no child has the same parents because all the different factors play into their specific relationship with their parents. And it's going to be very different from one child to the next based off of, you know, priorities and interests, and as well as like the stage of life that the parents are in and what they've learned, what they've tried, et cetera.
And birth order. The oldest typically has, if you go through albums, they have like 9 million pictures of the oldest one. By the time you get to the third one, did you ever take a picture? You know, and the parents are overprotective.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I grew up, I have 8 biological siblings. And I think it was basically that, like the first 3, maybe 4 of us, there are home videos and all of that. And then after that, it's like all done. Like,
I don't know where all these kids came from.
So, no, thank you for sharing that with us. You know, and I heard like, you know, one of the big common themes of what you were sharing was like time and connection. And that's, I think that's important for us to hear and to remind ourselves, you know, and it's not always about like, you know, I saw a video earlier today. It was a mom asking her daughters, like, what'd you get for Christmas last year? And she thought, and she couldn't remember. And then she was like, where did we go for family vacation? And she said Lake Tahoe, like that. Like it's that time you spend together, the things you do together as opposed to everything else. So appreciate that reminder. So you mentioned how like it was kind of a surprise, your first son. And you also mentioned that, you know, raising the next generation is one of like the most important things that we can do. Is that something that like, is that a mindset you already had, or is that something that kind of developed as you're raising your young sons?
Well, when you're holding your first child in your arms after they've just come out of the oven, it changes everything for me. The first thing was I had a much different understanding of love.
Mm-hmm.
I began to understand my parents and how they love me. And then when you have your second one, because your first one, you think, I don't have any love left. And then right. You have your second one and you go, wow, love's unlimited. So, and then once I had, you know, I just have a high sense of responsibility. And right. I think one of the things that we do as adults is we need to be the role model when we're raising them, what we expect them to do. And then as they got older, we would have discussions about integrity and work ethic and always doing the right thing.
Right.
Long term. And then when they were in college, I would fly sometimes and I'd write a letter to them about what I learned so far in life. So is it constant sharing about it's important. There's a book out. I think it was Patton. I can't remember who it was. It was letters to his son. No, I think it was actually Douglas MacArthur had written a book about letters to his son, which I thought was interesting. It's been a long time since I read it, so I may be off on the author. The essence of it is there's some really good stuff out there about what you're leaving behind.
Right.
And part of it is discipline. You know, I watched today, you know, we were out to dinner and the kids started acting up. We would literally stop dinner, pay the bill, and leave. We would not tolerate that behavior. And we had to suffer because we didn't get to finish our meal, but that wasn't the point. The point is that we don't tolerate this behavior and we're going to go home now.
Right.
And I'll tell you one other story. You can cut me off if you don't like it. My wife and I now were out for dinner a couple weeks ago, and we see this young couple come in with this cute little girl. She's probably like 5. And they come in and sit down at a table next to us. And first they do is they set up a little stand for her to have her phone going. And then they sat and looked in their phones.
Mm-hmm.
They gave the order. I thought, well, when the food comes, they'll put everything down. And no. And I think that is such a, I don't want to say sin. Well, it is a sin. I mean, what we do wrong to our kids is going to have a ripple effect.
Yeah,
absolutely. I'm guilty of it, but, you know, actively trying to combat it at the same time. Because I in those same exact instances, I see it out there. It's like, wow, I'm kind of guilty of this myself. Like, I got to change this. And
well, you don't have a kid yet, so we'll give you get out of jail card.
Yeah, but, you know, just even personally, like, I could go out with my dad. And we'll both be on our phones or whatever.
Sure.
So that's what I mean. Like, I'm guilty of that. And I was reflecting about this the other day too. It's, you know, it's like, I only have so much time left with my dad, and I want to take advantage of that, like, to continue to learn. And here we are, you know, faces in our phones or whatever, or I'm somewhere else instead of absorbing all of that and actually spending, because growing up, spending time with my dad was my absolute favorite thing. Like, we didn't have to go places, but if we sat there or just went on a car drive together, like, those are my favorite memories, driving from Minnesota to Colorado Springs, just the two of us, you know?
Sure, sure. And today, loud, you'd be on your phone the whole way, wouldn't be looking out the window.
Right.
When we were buying a new car, they had those TVs in the back of the seat so the kids mm-hmm. could watch TV. I ain't buying that car.
Right.
Yeah.
You're going to look out the window. That's where you learn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Unless we have conversations.
I remember growing up, the first time one of our friends pulled up with the car that had the TV in, I was so jealous. You know, I wanted that.
Yeah.
And we did big car trips, you know,
sure.
because my dad was in the Air Force, and my grandparents always lived in different states. So we would go on big, big road trips, you know, at least a day's worth of driving, if not more. Yeah, it was, you know, books, coloring books, you know, road games, the alphabet game, all that stuff.
It's on tape.
Yeah.
We're taking kind of a hybrid approach where we'll let Evie, she's 4, have a tablet for part of the ride, but it's definitely not the whole time, you know, and we try to play games as a family and whatnot.
As I understand it, big billionaires in the tech field don't let their kids have phones until they're in their teens.
Yeah, yeah, we don't plan on letting Evie have a phone until around then. I just read the book, The Anxious Generation.
Mm.
It's an excellent book, and it talks about how technology is having a drastic impact on our lives, but especially our mental well-being, and how there was a huge shift in mental health challenges for girls and boys starting around when this the smartphone came out, you know, 2008, and there was a strong correlation between that and his recommendation. Very strong recommendation is don't give your kids phones until after they're 16, until they're done fully. I mean, they're not, their brain, their prefrontal cortex is still developing into their 20s, but they're past one of the big developmental stages, you know,
right?
As a young teenager. So it's a big issue. One more thing on this, and you know, this has nothing to do with Unity, but it kind of does. Yeah, it's an important topic nonetheless. My wife and I, we were at a kindergarten information class earlier today, and the principal of the school who was leading it talked about how there is a huge challenge because kids come in to the classroom environment being used to being on their on devices. He said 70% of their time. I'm just quoting him. Maybe I misheard him, but that is, to me, I mean, I can believe it, but it's also astounding that that is the case. And I think it's just goes to show that, like, you know, we probably don't realize how much time we're letting our kids spend on these devices, you know, like, unless we're being, to your point, you talked about attention and intentionality, you know, we need to pay attention and we need to be intentional about how much time we're allowing them to have.
Have you guys read the Coddling of the American Mind? Coddling
no, I haven't.
No, but that sounds fascinating. I'm writing it down.
Me too.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's by Jonathan Haidt and Greg Lukianhoff. It talks about how we've made it so easy for our kids that they, you know, they don't know how to get back up. And the helicopter parents, I was shocked when I was talking to a college professor, this is years ago, that if he didn't give somebody the right grade, the mother would call from college. It's like, what? Are you kidding me? That we've just made them weep. And we don't want them to get hurt. We don't want them to get, you know. Life is tough. I'm sure you have heard of the book, The Road Less Traveled. And the opening line is, Life is Tough by Scott Peck. When we keep our kids from learning how to deal with adversity, when they become adults, they don't know what to do. And having dealt with very high net worth individuals over the years, or some families, you know, made you go out and go to work for another company before you could go to work in the company. You started, you know, putting, you know, changing tires on cars before you, you know, got to become the dealer.
Right.
Some don't do that. And then when the new CEO, who's never had to overcome anything, gets into a tough time, they don't know what to do. And I mean, I've seen families just destroyed because dad never got knocked down and never had to get back up. And loss of life is about, I mean, what you experienced with your loss of a baby, that's put you on your knees and you've recovered. Not recovered totally, but you've got back up. You didn't stop.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those things. It's like, you know, crucible of fire, sort of like you. And that's something that's been on my mind, too, as like I raise my kids is like, you know, we are blessed with so much, right, that they could easily go through life without any hardships. But like, how much will they learn with if they're not tested, you know, tested? And I think, you know, that comes down to, you know, the parents' responsibility is to provide those opportunities, you know?
So how much of this, like in the micro level from like the family perspective, can you then apply to the macro level, like the nation? I mean, we wanted to talk about unity, and I think this kind of gives us a segue into that. You know, we're trying to foster unity in our homes with all these principles and raising our kids that way and having them be open-minded. Like, is this all the same principles then that you would apply on that macro level, or what more goes into that?
Well, macro is the result of the micro. So if we do it right at the micro level, the macro level will evolve. So two young fish are swimming along. An old fish swims by and says, how's the water? And the two young fish look at each other and go, what's water?
Right.
We live and swim in a culture, a national culture. And our culture today is not healthy. Foundation of every relationship is trust.
Right.
And we don't trust each other. And surveys pointed out. I think it was Gallup or Pew. I always get these confused. But in 1950s, 72% of the people thought they were, or 78% of the people thought they were going in the right direction as a nation. Now it's 23. Right. In the 70s, the Pews did a study, and one that was really hard for me to hear is 80% of the people in the 70s trusted the healthcare system. It's like 37% now and fading.
Yeah.
So, and then you guys should look this up. Allstate Insurance did a study, probably 6 months old. You can Google it and download it, called the Trust Tipping Point. And as a society, our trust in each other has gone down. I know that sounds redundant, but what was more interesting to me is how unattached neighbors are from each other.
Yeah.
Many people don't know their neighbors. They don't wave at them. They don't acknowledge them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, having spent some time in Minnesota and know that there is such a thing as Minnesota nice, my wife was born in Alexandria, spent a couple of days there, and everybody was like, hi, how are you? Like, I mean, mm-hmm. she didn't know him. She left when she was like five, but it's just typical Minnesota. I found that to be true in the Midwest.
Yes.
Having lived in the West, in California, it's different. And I think part of it is because we understand in the Midwest, we need each other. If a major storm comes through, I'm going to help my neighbor get some firewood, or they're going to help me get some firewood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that interconnectedness. And I think what technology has done is thinking we don't need each other.
Right.
You know, we can go in our little silo and be comfortable and listen to everybody who agrees with us and never challenges us.
Mm-hmm.
And the Unity, my book, Unity and Service, Pathway to Responsible Citizenship, talks about tribes and the history of the United States and life cycles of democracy. But the big thing is for adults, my age even, to go out and volunteer in different programs. I'm currently chairman of the board of Tampa Bay Watch, which is a phenomenal organization, started long before I got involved, where we educate people about the bay, the health of the bay, and what they can do. Do restoration projects where we actually build oyster reef balls and plant them along the shoreline and seagrass. And we now, between these little oysters, each one filters 50 gallons a day.
Wow.
We are now doing 1 billion gallons a day with all the oysters we've put out there.
Wow, congrats.
Now, on the board is a wide variety of people with different political views. But we are committed to not worry about our differences, but we're committed to the mission that is bigger than ourselves.
Exactly.
And that's why people need to get out of the house and volunteer. And my big, hairy, audacious goal is universal national service. You turn 18, you serve the country for a year. There was an Air Force general who said, nobody ever washed a rental car. A lot of people think they're renting this country.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way the culture is.
Right.
And when COVID came, my wife retired and I retired in 2020. We bought an RV and circled the United States 5 times.
Oh.
And we'd be in RV parks, different places, and get to know people. And so many people just felt like, you know, they'd start complaining. If I had this happen to me today in the AT&T store, I started talking to this older guy. I'm 80, so must have been really old. And he said, you know, well, I can't do anything about what's going on. I said, no, you can. You can vote.
Mm-hmm.
You can do the time to do the research. You know, don't listen to what politicians say. Watch what they do. Who are the people that put party ahead of nation instead of nation ahead of party? Who are those people? Don't let them back in office. How many times have you heard a politician say they're running for their fourth or fifth term? I haven't got done what I said I was going to do, but just give me one more chance. Out of here. But that's up to us as the voters. Only 66% of people vote for presidents and less than 45% vote for the House every in the off-year elections. It's our country. We have the nation we deserve. And I think giving that lesson to your kids from beginning, talking about it, getting them involved in projects like my sons did with Boy Scouts. It gets them to understand it's our country and we've got to work together to make it healthier.
Yeah.
And what I've observed is by working with people with different perspectives, it begins to wash away the differences and you just see them as people.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know this or not, but there's a lot of families that have been broken up. Maybe you even know friends who won't go to Thanksgiving with their family because they don't agree politically.
Right.
That's horrible. Democracy requires compromise and learning from others. I was just on the phone with somebody today. I don't agree with 100% politically, but I learned from them.
Yeah.
And maybe my idea is here and their idea is here, but the ideal idea is here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know if I answered your question.
You did. It opened up a bunch more. I mean, I personally agree with the 1 year service, and I liked that you emphasize like in a region other than their home region, like that never would have crossed my mind. But that makes so much sense because like you were talking about taking your kids traveling to other areas to learn, like in order to really learn and broaden your horizons, you have to leave your community and become a part of another community and live in that lifestyle or in that, and then those people's shoes in order to really know and understand like what you're really the whole point of the service, honestly. I didn't serve in the military, but a lot of my family did. My younger brother actually is getting out of the Air Force tomorrow. So he's all excited.
Thank you for his service.
I absolutely will. He loved it. And so there is, our parents did instill in us kind of like that. You need to do something for others in that, or the nation in that regard, before, you know, in order to learn and understand the nation as a whole and build unity and help other people in order for you to be like really be successful in your own life and in your own family life. We all chose different ways of doing that. I worked for years in charitable nonprofits. I love doing that in different areas of Minnesota. And now I'm a corporate sucker working for a Fortune 50 company. But, you know, like I absolutely am grateful for those years that I like dedicating my life to service. And I know my brother is to dedicating service to an even bigger community, the nation as a whole. And you're able to take so much and learn so much and understand to really bring that back and say, hey, we are broken. We need to bring back a united state.
Yeah.
And only we can do it. Right. The government can't do it.
Exactly.
Only the citizens can. I'm curious, and you don't have to name the company, but a lot of the big corporations understand getting engaged in community is important, mm-hmm. and they have community projects. We have people come in from different companies and spend a day building the oyster mm-hmm. reef walls or planting seagrass or shoveling oyster shells into bags for restoration of shoreline. So you can be a catalyst in your company to... find out what's a local program you can do.
I work for Wells Fargo, and there is a huge promotion for community service. They give us, I think, 24 community service hours a year that we can use as a department or individually. But they really encourage us at the end of the year, we want to see your community service hours used.
Okay. Well, I feel better about having my money with you now.
That's awesome. So speaking of service, and I think that makes a lot of sense. It gets us out of our shells. It gets us outward focused, you know, inward focused. It helps us, to your point, see others. You know, online when we're arguing is just like we can equate the person on the other end of the keyboard with their statement. So that's all we know of them. But as soon as we get out from behind the keyboard and we're in the flesh and we see them, that they're just other human beings with their own unique experience that has led them to have the beliefs and values that they do. And imagine that you actually have shared values as well. So it all makes so much sense. How, if a dad listening to this is like, okay, yeah, like I want to get out there. I want to start volunteering. I want to involve my kids in volunteering. What are some simple ways that they can do that?
Well, you know, for me, when they were younger, it was easier for me to coach.
Mm-hmm.
Dads, we worked, had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
As they get older, I think scouting, Girl Scouts is an important thing. And the thing I like about those programs is that it gets you with a diverse group of people, but also you feel part of a pack or mm-hmm. a troop. So that gives you connection. But there's a lot of other things you can do. For example, if you were in St. Pete, Florida, and you wanted to do something with your dad, you can come out and we have days where we pick up debris around town, along the beaches. You can volunteer to clean fishing line, which we do. We recycle fishing line.
Okay.
Get this big bucket of really ugly stuff and we have to sort through it. And the monofilament is what they can recycle. Actually, we send it to Iowa where they turn it into other kinds of products. So just in a lot of towns have websites where they say, here's like four or five different things you can do. And my advice would be try two or three or four or five. First, it exposes your kid to a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm.
Huge. And then maybe after you've done, you know, okay, you know, we're going to do five and then pick our best one we like best. And we'll go back and give to that. But there's so much we can do. The most important thing is turning off the computer, turning off the TV and walking mm-hmm. outside.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, those are some great examples, and I especially appreciate them because in my mind, I was thinking, you know, like soup kitchen and, you know, cleaning the side of the road, but like coaching and scouting and all that, that sounds one, achievable, and two, two birds with one stone, because you're helping your kid develop in whichever respective activity that is.
So, and it requires a certain amount of discipline, and you meet every Tuesday or whatever it is. And so that, you know, the family works their way around that. And, you know, if it's just like once a year you go out and clean up the highway, that's great. But the consistency.
Yeah. Well, and especially with things like scouting, you probably will go out and do that sort of thing as a troop.
Right.
So those are great recommendations. And I'm especially kicking myself for the technical difficulties we had at the beginning of our hour, because now we're running short of time. So I wish we had more time to chat. But before we wrap up, can you tell us, Chip, our listeners, where can they learn more about you? Where can they learn more about your book, Unity and Service?
Yes, I have a website, unityandservice.org. And please go there and you can contact me through that. You know, we're you know, really a new nonprofit and trying to gather some funds, because I believe what we need is a national campaign on citizenship and responsibility and trying to and promoting universal service, which is, a lot of people say it's a great idea. A lot of people worked hard to make it happen. It hasn't happened. I mean, General Stanley McChrystal was a highly regarded individual, spent like 8 or 9 years trying to get national service. But only a group of people like us, I mean, call you back and put you to work, but only we can do it. There's no anybody out there on a white horse waiting to come and save the country.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love that as, you know, one of the big takeaways is like, that's so much of what I've seen online is like, everybody is, part of my French, bitching at each other. And they get a certain amount of fulfillment out of that. But at the end of the day, it's not doing any, it's doing more harm than good. So if you want to actually do something about it, then get out there and do something about it. And I'm going to take that to heart as well and look into how I can get involved, because
you got to drive the change you want.
Am I part of the problem or am I part of the solution?
Right.
And, you know, and getting out is what it's all about.
Yeah. Love it. Okay, Chip, we will share your details in the show notes so people can come and find you. If there is one thing that you want the dads listening to this show to take away, what would that be?
Unconditional love, which includes a role model, doing things you might not want to do, and also discipline. My dad was a Navy officer during World War II and was an educator. And I hate, he said this to me a million times and I hate it, but success is all about self-discipline, whether you're playing a sport, and you know, now almost 80 years later, it still echoes in my mind. When I start to get off track, I go, no, you know, I've got to be disciplined to make it happen, whether it's losing weight or building a business.
I love that. That's one of the things that we talk about in this show is like, what habits can you build to be the father that you want to be?
Right.
And what is the basis of a habit? It's discipline. So
actions create habits. Habits create destiny.
Ooh, I like that.
Man, okay, we're done with the show. That's a great way to end this. Might be the tagline for the episode. Thank you for dropping that. That among several other nuggets of wisdom. But Chip, thank you so much for your time and your service in something extremely important. And we're excited to see where it goes. So.
Great.
Thank you, Chip.
Thank you so much.
And thank you to the listeners.
Great to meet you guys. Take care.
Yep. Likewise.